Hello, CMYK community. Welcome to the episode of the CMYK Talks podcast. This is Seth. It's good to be back with you. It's been a while. I'm coming to you live. Well, not live. It's recorded, but live from the Canning living room. We've kicked the kids out of the house for the day. They're off seeing a dog somewhere. We have a microphone in front of us and a bunch of coffee, and we're here to have a conversation around this idea of generosity. And I think from where I sit right now and my narrative and history around the church and the church world, I think that it's really tough for me sometimes to talk about generosity and tithing, because so often there's this weird, I feel like there's a weird conversation around you have to give, and you have to give to the church and support its cause. And so what we're trying to do today is have this conversation with Ethan and Kaylee about this idea of generosity and what it's meant for them and their journey in it. And I'm really excited for it because, Ethan, we've had a lot of conversations around this before. Mm-hmm. Kaylee, you and me not so much, so welcome to the conversation.
Welcome.
But Ethan, you and I have had so many conversations about this, and as Matt identified, we wanted to get you guys' input and ideas around this idea of generosity and what's meant for you, because you guys have a kind of an interesting story around generosity. So, with all of that in mind, and we have coffee and comfy chairs, where do you want to start?
Well,
take it back, take it way back.
Should we kick it back to 1985?
Is that when you, when, what was 1985?
It's the year we were born.
The year of our birth.
Oh, you're not that much older than me then.
We didn't think we were.
I thought you were.
You're so, oh gosh.
You're so wise and kids and things.
Mm, okay.
It's because we have four kids.
Yeah, and I have a dog.
If so. We had zero kids, you'd think we were 12.
Yeah, it's the way Ethan wears his hat backwards.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Why don't you tell us about your charming childhood?
Okay. 1985.
I'm going to paint a picture for you guys. Uh-huh. Let's go back to Missoula, 1985. Can't think of anything.
The patchouli was thick in the
air.
Yeah,
I can't think of anything happening historically in 1985 right now off the top of my head. Otherwise, I would talk about
Besides Back to the Future.
Oh, that's a good one. So, I was raised in a home where, as far, and I think we'll, like, I would like to relate the word generosity in means of, in terms of, like, finances and money right now. But there's a lot of other ways to take that word. My parents were super hard workers. My dad was a school teacher. My mom stayed at home, and then eventually became a real estate agent when she was older. But, they had one income, and really we never ate out. My mom, thrift stores, like very, very penny pinching type of
intentionally frugal, or
yeah. So that, so what I want to highlight about my childhood, out of respect for my family, because I do think that they were very wise with their finances. However, they instilled this part of me, unintentionally, I believe. I mean, they didn't know they were doing this, that your character and who you are as a person is defined by how you use your money. And if you're spending money on going out to eat, or you're going to a movie, or you're even tithing, or you're, you know, giving money away, or you spend, you know, $100 on a pair of jeans, you're not a good person.
So frugal living really is equivalent to being a good person.
Yes.
Wow.
And I don't believe my family, my mom and dad, intended that. I don't think they intended that. Because I do want to respect them. But that is kind of what came out of my childhood. So before I met Ethan, I had a lot of guilt and shame about doing things that were seemingly frivolous. Going to a movie, eating out. So that was kind of my background. And they're very conservative, so not a lot of trust in the banks.
Not risk takers.
Definitely not risk takers. Now, they also are very stable and have set themselves up wonderfully. And they're also very generous with me. They didn't, you know, pay for my college directly or anything, but if ever I was in...
Oh, really?
Ethan paid for my college. It's because he's my master. Just kidding. That's a joke. We can edit that out. I'm his master.
We're not going to.
Surprise! You're on a cult podcast.
Welcome.
But So, yeah. So, they have provided... I mean, they're very generous to me if I ever needed anything.
So, they've taken care of you.
They've taken care of me.
And also... But in that, how you spend your money is tied to who you are as a person.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Tied to my character development, which is... It's hard when you enter into a marriage or relationship or anything, and you have that kind of guilt and shame associated with how you're spending your money or what you're doing with your money or what you're doing with your things. Even my time. I remember my mom, like, I'd go to youth group or something and I'd be volunteering, and my mom would be like, well, don't let them take advantage of you. Like, don't. It was kind of this narrative of like, what's yours is yours. You get yours.
So frugality, not even just in money, but frugality in time, yeah. Energy, effort,
mm-hmm. Yes,
everything.
I'm not it's
a frugal lifestyle.
Just very frugal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she grew up poor. I mean, she, mm-hmm. It's not unmerited.
Yeah, by any means. You're not surprised.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. She's a wonderful lady. Mom, if you're listening, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Don't worry, that part we can edit out. Okay.
I don't think she knows how to work podcasts.
That's I okay. know exactly how to work a podcast.
No, your mom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're good. You're probably in the clear.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
She's probably too frugal to, like, buy a device to listen to the podcast.
She probably just doesn't even know how to get on the internets to click the things.
So we're good.
To play yeah, we're the good. Things. We're yeah, safe. We're good. Anyway, take it away.
So, Ethan, you then...
I grew up in a family of four, and my dad worked... full-time, and then later in life, my mom had her master's degree, so she worked too.
Mm-hmm.
But my family financial situation, both my parents were like middle of the road, maybe slightly poor. Growing up, I think my dad was making like $18,000 a year with four kids, so mm-hmm. we were on food stamps, and there was this tension because things were really tight, and so my dad never talked about tithing. Giving. My mom was a radical giver and would just almost flippantly just throw money around at mm-hmm. people. So I had two very different stories being told to me from my parents about money. My dad basically was living out of fear of failure, working, saving every penny he could. Yeah. And then I had my mom just kind of never really had a budget, but it was. I think it was Holy Spirit led, like was giving to people and was very generous with their time. Like we would pick people up on the side of the road and take them to Burger King and then yeah. give them $100.
Wow.
People that I'd be nervous to pick up today with my kids, but my mom didn't care, or she just knew it was going to be okay. Yeah.
She never got murdered.
No, neither did I.
Which is great.
I think. And so... But she would only do that when my dad wasn't around.
I mean, that's a case study right there.
Because when my dad was around, she would do all of her tithing on her own with mm-hmm. her own money.
So your parents kept their finances separate?
Yeah, my dad gave my mom an allowance.
Oh, that's cool.
Yikes.
Which is what I do with Kaylee.
I got one of those. Just
oh, my God.
This week, you shall have $12.
Aw, no. What a nice master.
So she would tithe
He's
off,
such
she
a
would,
good master.
She would tithe off. My mom would tithe off of her allowance, which is... Sounds really bizarre to say.
Mm-hmm.
So,
she's a grown ass woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I approach money, even when we started in marriage, it's just you give if you have something left over. But I also have this piece in me that my mom put in me, where it was like being cheerful. My mom was a very cheerful giver. Like mm-hmm. she was the first person I ever saw like joyfully give.
Did that rub off on you?
It was in me, but it didn't. My actions followed my dad.
Mm-hmm. So that's probably a good transition point then for the narrative of your guys' story, that if your actions followed your dad, and Kaylee, I'm sure that if your character is tied to how you spend money, you guys get married, and is the narrative then of marriage early on one of let's be frugal?
Oh, Ethan wanted to buy something, and I was like, no.
Like, you just put the kibosh on it?
No, we're not buying that. Yeah. I put the kibosh.
Yeah, because in my family, we'd go out to eat. We would go camping.
So you guys spent money recreationally in some ways, where even Kaylee's family didn't.
Never.
And so even there was a disconnect between you guys on how to spend money. Not even necessarily being generous, but just money management alone, there's
yeah.
a disconnect.
Even though we were on food stamps, my parents took us to Disneyland, and they put it on a credit card, which I only found out just a few months ago.
Yeah.
So we would still... And so when I would recommend to Kaylee that we do this family trip, she's like, oh, no, that's irresponsible. We can't afford that. And we could afford it, but she didn't think.
But for her, she has a narrative in her mind of how to spend money.
Yeah.
That's a wasteful.
So what's interesting is we're not even like to the generosity piece yet, but we're already having issues with how to spend money, what to do with money. And especially early on in marriage, there's difficulty.
Yep.
Okay.
So I think we tithe mostly sometimes in the first 5 years of marriage.
Maybe. I mean, honestly, I don't know.
We did, but sometimes.
Oh, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
And a lot of the tithing we did was giving to friends. And that's still kind of what we do.
Yeah, but even for the sake of this conversation, like the generosity evolves.
Like
your idea of generosity continues to grow beyond, because I think that's where this conversation breaks down in a lot of the church world, is the idea of generosity stops at the tithe, like you're being generous. Mm-hmm. But for you guys, this conversation keeps growing into what the redefinition of generosity is, which one of the phrases we throw around CMYK is we have enough. And so like that continues to shape how you guys feel you're generous.
Yeah.
And how you continue to expand your generous lifestyles.
Yes. Our finances, the way we view finances, are shaping in our marriage.
Yeah.
The way we see this word generosity.
Yeah. So that then, based on what I know about you guys, what the listener knows to this point, you guys are married young, you have different opinions of not only money and finances, but also generosity. But then you end up at a place in Seattle, a church there, that really starts to reshape what it means for you guys to be generous.
Yes, sir.
Does that enough backstory to lead us to that?
Yeah, point? that was like we moved to Seattle our second or third year of marriage.
Okay.
And they would talk about money literally every church service.
Highly
really?
Uncomfortable.
That's really
yeah, and a lot of people. But then they talk about generosity, and then the phrase that they would always use, which just stuck with me, is they said, "Join us in the adventure of generosity," which sounds like a cheesy church statement. And then they had this school of generosity that you could go to on Saturdays, and they had these like uber successful businessmen and women speaking on this topic. So it was really prevalent.
In what capacity were they talking about money every week? Like just you should give, or you should use their phrase, the adventure of generosity, or like because money's uncomfortable to talk about in the church world. I think money's a weird kind of taboo topic in general a lot of the time.
So
if they're talking about it every week, how are they talking about it?
Like from like a hard issue about whose money is it, like the possessiveness of someone's time, treasures, and talents. And they also talked about like sacrificial giving. And so a lot of it was like dollars and cents based, but a lot of it, the part that really stuck with us was the perspective on money and the like the fear and the grip that it can hold on your life.
Mm-hmm.
And how it like controls the control it has. The control and the fear.
Yeah.
And what does it look like? How can the adventure of generosity tear off those handcuffs of fear and control?
Yeah. I'd like to add, there is a twist of like, if you giving makes your life feel good. Or giving makes life good. And so there was a tiny twist of that in the church of if you give time and energy, talents and money, there's a reward, which we personally do not agree with. However,
why don't you agree with it? Are we going to get there?
Let's table it for a second. Cause I just want to clarify that. I think this would be a good thing to get kind of like round out how we came to where we came.
Okay.
When we were listening to them talk about, we didn't hear it that way for us personally.
Yeah.
But at the time, it didn't sound like that. Looking back, I can see how a lot of people
interpreted the only people that spoke at the School of Generosity would talk about like how they owned helicopters.
Yeah. I mean, it's just and such so, like, bullshit.
There's a definite gap in... I mean, you guys are a brand new couple, and you got guys that own helicopters talking about money.
Yeah, and they're just like,
there are no poor people talking about generosity.
It's a huge disconnect.
Huge.
Yeah, so huge we were holding on this heart control perspective piece, but there was some maybe prosperity gospel.
Is helicopter guy talking about control and fear? Or is he is.
Yeah, they're talking about the whole thing.
They're talking about the whole thing. And so there's pieces you take from Helicopter Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm talking about sacrificial giving, like, and having, like, the joy and peace of knowing that this is God's money, not yours. And what does it mean to live sacrificially?
I mean, it's a
with time and money. And then they'd also talk about the helicopter. Someone gave him a helicopter.
Right.
Oh, okay. So I can see where the waters get a little muddy.
Yeah, you're drawing this like sequence. Like I did this and this and this, and
then I got a helicopter.
And then I got a helicopter.
Yeah, and you can too with just 7 easy installments of $7.99 CMYK.
Call 1-800 helicopters for free.
So that's
right.
For Jesus.
Helicopters for Jesus.
Well, I just what I wanted to add to that was in that part of our story, we're in Seattle. We're hearing this topic. We're talking about money, generosity. What Ethan and I really gleaned from that was the heart issues. And so there was this underlying weirdness about it.
Which I've heard Ethan say a couple times, fear and control.
Fear and control. So
maybe some of the negative emotions around
being
generous.
So for me, that personally led me in my own journey of starting to examine how I viewed money, finances, time, and energy to character for me personally. And how I had withheld finances, time, energy, whatever, because I kind of had this, I'm going to get my own.
Mm-hmm.
This is mine. I earned it. Mm-hmm. I worked for it. Why do you get it? You didn't do anything. Like you didn't pick yourself up by your bootstraps kind of attitude. And we had, and so for me, that was when I started to really self-examine that kind of narrative that I had built my whole life, and it really challenged it. So there was some good that came out of that.
Did it challenge some of your pre-existing ideas of your character being tied to how you spent money? Like that you could be a good person and still spend or give,
man.
Or like you go out to dinner and enjoy it and
I'm
be
still
a good
person? I don't know.
Do you still struggle with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I call my mom and I'm like, I bought a couch on Craigslist and I'm afraid to tell her how much.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm tempted to tell her less because I'm nervous about how she's going to see that in me, which is so crazy.
It's
it's not her, like, and I want to say again, mother, I love you. This is not because she's intending to instill fear.
No, they taught you what they knew.
Exactly.
And that's okay. So and we'll get to what's going on now, but even then, as you were chipping away at some of these ideas of money and generosity, you still struggle with the ideas around it.
100%. Yeah. No
and
doubt.
The other thing that I always remember is, like, they use this hands analogy where, like things are put into your hands and I was afraid to lose them, so you squeeze. And as you squeeze tight, everything just slips out the side.
Close-fisted or open.
So then they're living life with open hands. When your hands are open, stuff can go away or fall out. Or it's easy to give, but then more stuff can, something might plop into your hands. Mm-hmm. But if your fists are closed enough.
And you're not angry. If it gets taken away, if your job gets taken away, your money gets taken away, and you know, like, that's life, and it can be really shitty and really hard. But you still have a community that loves you. You still have a God that loves you. This is not about getting money, but that you're still loved and supported. You're not going to be so. It's going to be a little. You're going to be a little more flexible.
Well, then let me reframe this. Did the church you were at in Seattle not just talk about money? Did they also talk about other ways to be generous?
Because
it seems like you guys, with where you're at with generosity now, is not just money. Money's obviously I feel like money's the most identifiable thing we can be generous with culturally. But for you guys, you're generous in so many other ways. And was the backbone of their teaching at this church also to be generous with time,
talents.
Energy, talents.
Time and talents, yeah.
Time and talents. So time, money, and talents was there? Or did they lump money into talents? Time and talents?
No.
They
three different buckets.
Yeah.
Like
buckets.
One thing that we started doing to be generous is we started leading a marriage class, which took... We spent money to facilitate it, but we also spent hundreds of hours of our time with little kids just to facilitate. And that was, I thought, one of the most generous things that we could have done.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with money.
But I feel like that piece is always missed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, that's always something that's bothered me about the conversation around generosity is that it's so easy to focus on the dollar signs. Because obviously... it's something we can measure. And I totally get that. But time and talents is a whole other mm-hmm. ball game of generosity.
Well, I'll give you a story.
Okay.
Can I bring hold your seats. This is a good one.
Hold on to your seats.
Hold on to your seats.
Is this like, yeah, tell it.
Oh, well, I just
want to. Well, we have more story to tell, but I don't want to take
away. We have as much time as I need to tell this story.
I need. Okay. As much time as I need.
I need all the hours.
Cool.
And days.
All right, tell your story.
This has to do with John and Kelly Binder. Can I talk about them?
I mean, you already did, so you might as well.
Okay. I'm going to name drop. Well, they came over. They moved here, and they came over and they randomly offered to babysit our kids one night.
Yeah.
I've never forgotten that. Like, they came over, and they're just like, wow, it sounds like you guys have had, we just loved hearing about your story of what you went through, and we just want to come over and watch your kids. I mean, that their time mm-hmm. was more precious than
their paying time my gave rent. Us, their time gave us time.
Right.
It was so, to see two grown-ass adults with full-time jobs, I mean, they're a nurse and doctor, and they're like, hey, can we come watch your kids?
Yeah.
What a mismatching experience for me. Of having someone care for you that much that they would take their evening out of their busy schedule and watch your kids.
Yeah.
So that to me is, like you said, we miss that a lot.
Yeah. And that, now, so, because obviously you were at this place in Seattle before you met John Kelly.
Yeah.
So were you, and so you give time to this marriage. So much like John Kelly gave you their time, you give your time to this marriage class.
Mm-hmm.
And does that, how does that then shape how you see generosity? Like, because it's more than just money, it's time, effort, talent, ability.
Yeah, and I think part of it, like, generosity for me is, at the end of the day, I think the person that wins the most is the giver, not the receiver. Mm-hmm. So, like, we were doing this marriage class, but I think we benefited the most out of it,
mm-hmm.
even though we were giving our time.
Yeah. What do you think you got out of it?
Oh.
For me personally, just like it filled this like leadership mentorship bucket that's inside of me, but more importantly, just the work that we were doing together, like leading together as a couple and spending time together,
facilitating,
yeah,
doing that work together, and then seeing the fruit or the mess of it, but doing that as a couple was really exciting.
It filled my talking bucket where I just got to talk and talk and talk. And
this
and
is
cry.
Why for this podcast we have all the time I that could, you need.
We did so much crying in that marriage group and gossip. No, I'm just kidding.
Everyone loves a good cry though.
Oh, cry it out.
I cried hard after the Garth Brooks concert this last year.
Stop.
I had a good cry. Yeah. It
was Garth great. Brooks oh, brings yeah. you to tears.
It did what that song? Night. It did that night.
Did Trisha Yearwood
no,
come
I didn't,
out?
No, I didn't cry till I got home. Then I cried.
You cried after.
Yeah, I didn't
you
want to cry during.
You had a post cry.
Yeah, I had a post concert cry.
Post concert cry. Yeah. Tell me more.
No, okay. Not here. This is not the place.
Okay, well, we'll save it. We'll
it
table
a,
that.
It was a spiritual moment for me.
Let's table it.
Yeah, we'll table it. Maybe okay. next podcast.
Okay.
So
the key, the thing, like I felt like in God Seattle, Brooks. In Seattle though, it was like I feel like I unlocked, like I became like my mom. Like I yes. finally understood like what it meant to be a cheerful giver and understand like
connection.
Releasing the like fear and control and the shackles and. And for me personally, I had like a radical shift. Like nothing was ever the same.
So fundamentally, we see the shift in Seattle of yes. fear, control, probably some insecurity in there about money. And Seattle somehow in the experiences you had and the things they taught in the midst of some of the frustrations, helicopters, yeah. You guys learned to be generous with your time, talents, and money.
Mm-hmm.
And then, where do we go from Seattle?
Well,
we moved to back to Billings 4 years ago for yep. a coffee company startup.
Mm-hmm.
And
let's leave the name out.
That's fine. That's probably good.
And
you think
that's
so?
Fine. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
okay,
fine.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
And I was, and then the that was that. It felt like years, but it only lasted 12 or 16 months, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But near the end of it, I was working 100-hour weeks. Which people say they work 100-hour weeks, but I was working like 8 a.m. to 3 a.m.
Yeah, like I'll work like a 55-hour week and felt like I worked 100.
Yeah. But to actually log 100 hours in a week is really hard.
Yeah.
And we were doing that. And that put a huge burden on
our marriage and our family and our life.
My master was overworked.
Yeah, and the burden then on the subservient wife is brutal.
And I just had to cook.
And so, like, our ideas and views of generosity didn't change. And then the coffee company died. And I kept working for 3 months to resurrect it, which I shouldn't have. And during that time, I didn't make any money. Kaylee wasn't working.
You said your views didn't change of generosity. So, like, you're working 100-hour work weeks. Are you still giving people as much time, talent, and money as you can?
Not time, but definitely tithing.
That was definitely part tithing, of it. But for me, like, my time became, like, mentoring the staff. So
is that what created 100-hour work weeks? Is you felt so committed to, or did you actually have to work 100 hours?
I think you had to actually.
I actually had to work.
It's a startup.
And so you, in the midst of working 100 hours, are finding time in the midst of it to spend time with younger people to pour into their lives.
Can I categorize that? You were giving weren't just working a job, you were giving emotionally. Like, you were connected to it emotionally in a way that didn't allow you to come home and separate and say, this is a job and I can come home. You were investing your heart, energy, emotions and soul into people and this startup, which creates, you know, you are working 100-hour weeks because you have to, but you're also emotionally so invested.
Yeah.
It doesn't allow reprieve, rest, which is not a bad thing, but, and I think sometimes that has happened, but that's what you were doing.
Mm-hmm. So you're in a busy season at this time.
Busy.
For you.
Super busy.
Yeah, and there was never, like, I don't ever remember feeling like resent for that. I don't really remember you feeling resentful of me working
because
it felt like the right thing to do with the right people at the right time.
We felt so excited.
So this thing doesn't work.
Nope. Not even a little bit.
Yeah,
which gets interesting because that piece of the story is really important because the next piece of the story is y'all broke.
We broke ass.
Yeah, y'all broke.
We got broke ass.
Yeah, so I kept working for 3 months, and at this point we have 3 kids.
We should make a hip hop song.
I didn't
about
finish.
You guys.
I didn't say the last word.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Then it'd be a real hip hop song, and this is a podcast.
Well, I don't
want to
culturally
song.
Appropriate either because I'm albino and stuff.
That's fine.
I'm not really albino. I'm just very white. That was also inappropriate. Continue.
Okay, thanks.
At least she knows what's inappropriate and what's not.
That's true.
That's just a growth step.
Yep.
Okay, so you're broke.
Yeah, so we're working for 3 months with no pay, and we had, I also made the massive mistake of funding the company through loans, personal loans that we took out.
Personal credit card.
And then we started using our personal credit cards to fund the company.
So you believed in this pretty hardcore.
Don't do it, people.
Yeah, so
we're upside down, I mean, like 6 figures plus.
Upside down.
Do not put it on your personal credit card.
And you still have this part of you that you're like, we got to be generous.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Great philosophy, guys.
So
and then I worked for 3 months for free, and then everything just went. So this was like fall of 2015.
Okay.
My mom got re-diagnosed with cancer. During that, in the spring, in the fall, things were deteriorating quickly. Kaylee started working as a sub in school district 2, and I worked at Walker's in the evenings,
mm-hmm.
and my mom's health got worse, and in December of 2015, she passed away, and I still didn't have a full-time job, and Kaylee was still subbing, and I was still working nights, and we were in, not only was I not making money, but we had all this debt, and when you have debt, you have debt service, and we were supposed to be paying this debt off,
mm-hmm.
so I was meeting with the banks in this triple debt restructuring program, just trying to not declare personal bankruptcy because the banks wanted and needed money from me. And not only did we not have any collateral, we didn't have any income. So I didn't have a job. I was looking for a job,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't have any
cash
flow.
And I got pregnant.
And then my mom died. And then 2 weeks later, Kaylee called me and said that she was pregnant.
Immaculately.
Immaculate Inception Part 2.
Conception.
Yeah.
So that was January. That was like just over 2 years ago.
That was fun. Let's stop doing that.
And then in February, I took a job
February 2016?
Yeah. That was peer commission with no base. And we had smart, wise Christian people in our lives telling me that I was committing like financial suicide.
Yeah, sounds like it, because you're upside down, six figures in debt, and you got debt to pay, and you got a baby on the way, and you've got no money.
Yeah, and then over the first, like, over the next 10 months, for the rest of that year, I made about $7,000.
So what is, okay, total. So in the midst of all that, what does generosity look like in the midst of that?
Surviving. I mean, honestly, like, to me, it was just, we were surviving. We were
like so laughably poor that like it was almost easier to give money away because it, like we didn't. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
And I want to say that the thing I want to say though is that was hard and we were surviving, but we also it's a very rich white person problem. Like we had a wonderful safety net. Like if we couldn't pay rent, my dad helped him.
Yes. Yeah.
If something really bad would have happened, we could have borrowed a friend's car.
Yeah, let's not discredit that.
If we lost our house, which we didn't, we could have stayed with you and Michaela.
Yeah, right? Totally.
Yeah.
Okay. No, just kidding. We have two bedrooms.
My point, like, so it was hard and it was crazy and it was...
No thanks, we'll get a hotel.
But at some point, like, I also want to be reflective on the fact that, like, our safety net... Our life and our family and our community allowed us to endure that.
We have bootstraps.
So here's a question. Do you think that in the midst of you guys being really broke and having a safety net, did that just reemphasize the generosity in your minds of like, because all of those people would have been generous with you.
100%.
And so...
And our friends were being generous with us with time and money. Even though we weren't asking.
Can I say something? Uh-huh. Here's what it did for me. I began to realize, holy shit, what if we didn't have people who could help us? What if we didn't? Like, those thoughts started creeping into my mind because I'd never had to consider that before, ever. Yeah. Our lives have been pretty, you know, lives are hard no matter what, but comfortable. Mm-hmm. We had people who could help us out. There are people in this world who don't have that, and that idea of, like, picking yourself up by your bootstraps just really was challenged in my mind because there are people who literally do not have bootstraps. Or boots. How can you possibly get out of a situation when you don't have any help?
Yeah.
Or when someone takes your car and you can't get to work.
I negotiated with the bank this troubled debt restructuring because I have a fancy college degree in finance. And so I was able to negotiate on my family's behalf.
And you're a white guy and you walk in with nice
shoes and a suit jacket. And the bank was like, great.
Yeah, regardless of how much you made that year, you had everything.
I had the tools.
You had the tools to recover. Look,
amen.
That you had it together and you were okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I convinced them that it'd be okay, and it ended up being okay. But they believed me, and because of that, we were able to defer a bunch of debt.
It had nothing to do with even how hard we worked. It just is. It is what it is.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, when I go back to my childhood narrative, my character now, I feel like that's challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. So people in the world. When I see when I hear of a family who is on food stamps and they go out to eat or go to a movie, I don't have this thing in me that's like, oh, well, just don't go to a movie.
Right.
Save every $20. You know, that's gone now because of that experience, because we were in a place of desperate need, and it allowed me to really reflect. Which is really a gift of generosity in itself.
Well, and there's a idea to expand upon beyond that of if we're all people, let's say we're in a position to be generous, there's probably people around us that, much like you guys, need our help, could use our help, and we have the unique opportunity to help them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to figure out how to formulate the best words around it, but you guys talking about how you made no money... You were broke, but you still had these safety nets. Like, I wonder how many people just maybe we need to look at and go, yeah, I can be your safety net, or I can help you.
Most people are pretty bad at asking for help. And so, like, people that were helpful to us, and we were bad at it too, but people were aggressive with us saying, seems like you're here. I'm going to do this thing.
So people were aggressive with you and help. It wasn't you seeking out anything.
No, I had a lot of shame.
Oh, yeah. I grew up poor and was like...
Ethan, yeah.
I went from this position of managing a company of 80 with a great salary...
And to waiting tables.
To waiting tables. Yeah. And I was hoping that, like... And then my former employees would come in and I would be serving them. Literally. And I was like... It was... And then the bank would be calling and say, you owe me money. And
It was a nightmare.
It was deep. I felt deep shame.
Talk more about, because this didn't come up in our conversation before the podcast, but talk more about these people who sought you out to help you. Because that's another weird position to be in, because you don't want to feel, you don't want to make them like embarrassed. You don't want to like, you know, you don't want to add any more shame on their life. But at the same time, you said you had people seeking you out to help you.
Yeah. Do you want me to tell a story?
Because that like.
Well, so when this is actually from Seattle, but our car broke down, and a family saw that and just said, here's a car. And we're like, okay, yeah, we'll give it back to you when we're done. They're like, no, you can just have it because you need it for your commuting. Mm. It's like, oh, okay. I would have never asked for anyone for a car.
So this family,
that seems crazy.
Yeah, it does seem crazy, but this family has their eyes open, and they're in a position to help. Yeah, but
they're in a position to help.
I think we're going to get there in this narrative of generosity that, like, I think we're all in some kind of position to be able to help if we're talking about time, talents, and money.
Yes.
But so this family just identifies a need and gets after it.
They get after it.
When then one day I was at the coffee shop and it was, and someone said, what are you doing today? And I said, I'm trying to figure out how to pay rent, to be honest. It's the first. And they said, how much is your rent? So I told him, and he said, okay, here you go. And he just handed me cash.
This guy you don't know?
No, a guy.
No,
oh,
you knew him. Okay, this is a very intimate relationship.
This is an intimate relationship. But still, that's even in intimate relationships, that's weird.
It is weird.
Mm-hmm.
And uncomfortable.
And my mom would be like, I mean, I can hear my mom saying, oh my gosh, you paid their rent?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they went to a movie and out to eat, and they didn't, and they went to the Buckle and bought a new shirt? Yeah, mm-hmm. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
They needed their rent paid. Like, it's okay if they went to the Buffalo
Yeah, but you had
shirt.
To grow there. You had to get to that place. Yeah. Like, that's the I think that's the heart behind a lot of this is that this journey of generosity for you guys is one of immense growth.
It's growth.
Because you did not just, you weren't born there.
No, and the biggest piece for growth for me, it was the, like, we giving with strings attached. And, like, I'm giving you this money, but I want to know what you're doing with it. And I want to see the fruit of my giving.
That's how it was for you.
Whenever I'd give, I'd want to know, like, what are you doing with it?
Yeah, so tell me about the car.
So, like, accountability of, like, I'm helping you, and you'd better use it for what I'm helping you for.
Yeah.
Exactly. And in Seattle, I was like, okay, God, give me a situation to give to someone. And so I felt led to give to this guy, and I chickened out, and I ended up driving to his house 45 minutes, and I tried to give him a $100 bill, and he looked at me and said, my family is very wealthy. I'm going on a trip. It's already funded. I don't need the money. And I said, I felt like the Holy Spirit prompted me to give this to you, and I just need you to take it, and I don't really care what you do with it. I just have to give it to you, and this is for me and not for you. And he was like, oh, crap, you're right. And that was the first time I ever gave, like, knowing that he didn't need it, and for the first time not caring what
like
he did with
mom.
It.
Like your mom. Like Carrie.
Yeah, picking people up.
Yeah.
So then the funniest...
That was a really beautiful... That's beautiful.
Yeah, that was, like, one of, like, my most vivid generosity, or we have enough moments, is when you're giving, and he told me he didn't need it, and I still was thrilled that I could give it to him, and I didn't care.
Yeah, you honestly bullied him into taking it, and you realized that.
And then once I was honest with him, he was like, oh, I'm sorry, I should have never said no.
How awkward.
Yeah.
And then to continue the car story, once we were in a better place, more recently, we saw someone that needed a car, and so the car that someone gave us, we ended up giving that car to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what he did with it?
He instantly flipped it the next week
bought a truck
and then ruined the truck, and it was totaled. And within 2 weeks,
He had no car again. We were very upset about
that. So
that
was a pretty challenging moment where we're saying we're going to give this no strings attached. And all of a sudden, I could feel the strings coming back saying,
yep.
Okay, we helped you. We needed you. This would have been a good place to follow through.
We needed you to do what's right with the car. We needed you to be perfect and never make
I was frustrated.
Isn't that the tension in the phrase,
serious.
We have enough, that like, we have enough means there's no strings attached.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where I have hang-ups even in having enough is I feel like there's always strings attached to my generosity, which is why I'm interviewing you. We're not interviewing me. But, okay, like, how do you then get to that place of no strings attached to we have enough? Because you seem like you even, like, there's still moments where you're going to deal with it, which maybe that's our transition to, like, now. Yeah. Where are you guys at now with this conversation of generosity?
Good segue, Seth. Gosh, you're good at
this. Yeah, my thought on that is, like, if you feel called to give to something, that's enough. Just do that, and then you're done.
So if you feel, what is...
Like, if I feel, like, if Kaylee and I are praying, and we feel like we're supposed to give to you and Michaela, I don't really care if you need it or not. If we feel like we're supposed to do that, and that's, we have some prompting, or that's what we want to do, and we do that, that's where it stops.
Are we allowed to strip back the Holy Spirit and prayer talk for a second and just say, like,
no,
what if
this is a cult podcast?
Oh, yeah,
we are gonna sacrifice some lambs later. And no,
well, we must listen to the master, Ethan. Yep. So, but no, like, but I really want to peel that back for a second, because there's people that don't engage that type of conversation and go, Holy Spirit and prayer.
And it's
how do we look at someone?
I'm not going into the backyard at night looking at the moon saying, Holy Spirit, give me a vision of who I should give money to. It's more like I'm trying to be like, keep my heart sensitive and soft to be, and my eyes open to needs that I might
open
see.
Open to needs.
Okay, I like that.
Needs.
Yeah. So, because, like, I feel like that reframes the conversation for someone who's like, you know, this Holy Spirit prayer thing, I don't think it's for me right now, but generosity is for me. And so for you, it's being aware of the situations around you.
Yeah, where's
much
the
like
need?
That, much like that family who gave you a car, is it because they were just aware of your situation?
It's caring and then engaging. So, like, part of it, like, just walking, like, going about your day, caring about how the people are doing, and then engaging and trying to and being receptive to where they're at, what comments they're making, or if they're clearly presenting a situation where you know you can help.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's like moving, you're like, yeah, I got a big move this weekend, I'm pretty stressed. I'd love to help you move.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all. I mean, that's what that looks like. That's the prayer and Holy Spirit piece. I didn't have to pray.
I don't think anyone's ever said, I'd love to help you move, but they've said,
I have.
They've said, I'll help you move.
No, here's the thing.
I didn't need to stop at that moment and be like, okay, let me pray if I should help you move. Yeah, I think the answer is yes.
I just, for the podcast sake, Ethan Canning, if you are moving and you tell Ethan Canning, he will always say yes.
Yeah, but will he say, I would love to help you move?
He will. Yeah,
that's my position. I don't know if anyone's in love with
Ethan,
it. Maybe I could be wrong.
Listen. Ethan has skinny guy. Look at my eyes. He has skinny guy strength. So when he is lifting a couch, those little arms get under that couch,
Little chicken legs for arms.
And
his
legs are actually quite thick. And he lifts very hard.
I can't tell right now he's wearing pants.
Take off your pants.
It's
fine. This is a podcast.
They can't see.
Yeah,
anything.
We'll do that later, maybe.
Yeah. So for you, it was this receptive openness. Well, the moving analogy kind of got us off track for a second. But for you, it's the receptiveness of going, an awareness of what's going on around you, and then a response to that awareness of maybe in the moment identifying a need that you could potentially meet, and it's in your path.
Yeah.
I think part of the first piece is you have to care. You have to care about that other people might need something.
Which means
you have to care first, and then once you care, then you now have to listen and engage.
Yeah.
And then once you're there, then you have to actually act. Like, I think for part of my life, I didn't actually care. In my family, like, if you are poor, it's because you're doing a crappy job at work, and maybe you should get a better haircut and read a book and interview
train
better.
Yourself up, yeah.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
wear a nicer jacket.
Yeah.
I didn't care.
Did your mom care?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that was probably her biggest asset,
And that's why she found people to give to, because she was just running around the world caring and looking for ways.
Mm.
Like, so generosity was almost easier for her because she cared.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like more available.
I think it was for her. Like, it did something to her. It fulfilled her in ways that she wasn't fulfilled in other parts of her
life. The person that the most satisfied piece of it was her. She got the most out of it.
It feels really good to, like, when you hear a friend talking and they're like, man, it's been a hard week or a hard month, or like you see friends at dinner across the restaurant, and they're having, like, a friend's taking a girl out on a date, and you pick up their check. Like, nothing feels better than just, like, I got it. Like, I care about you. Like, I just want to, or like calling my friend in the morning, taking her to the Y. Do you need to get out today?
Okay. I don't mean to call you out, but I'm going to challenge that a little bit.
No. Nope.
Because earlier in the podcast.
No, thank you.
You said.
Pass.
You said.
Nope.
It's not about, because you're talking about what they taught you back in Seattle, and you said, it's not about, necessarily that you don't believe that generosity is about what you get out of it. A generosity is about something more. Mm. So while that feels good,
I don't think I said that.
You said something along those lines.
No, I know what you said. It's about something more. It's about the hard issue of having the wanting to control money.
Okay.
And this is mine, and it's I earned it, and I deserve it, and I get to choose what to do with it.
I do what I want with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you're lucky enough for me to give it to you, I need to know exactly what you're doing and why you need it. And I'm going to watch that to make sure. And if you don't use it well, I won't give it to you anymore.
Okay.
That is what broke.
So generosity is not about the control. And we talked about that a little bit in this podcast. Right? Like, mm-hmm. It's not about the control. It's just about the freedom of being generous. Mm-hmm. No strings attached.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, not even deeper than that for me. It's just about the freedom of not being chained to money.
Yeah.
Or things.
I'm not talking about even giving, just being free of that, I'm not worried about tomorrow.
Okay.
And I'm not stressed about money. And
now, is that easier for you to say now?
Because we have enough.
Because you have enough. Because your situation now is completely different than it was back in 2015. You guys, it's just not the same. You guys are in a position that is much better off. And I get it. You've worked your butts off. You took this commission job and you had no money and it worked out for you.
Yeah, that's not everyone's story though.
I know it's not. And that's why I'm trying to that's why I want to really frame this conversation around not just money, but the heart of generosity.
Mm. My thought is if you can't, it sounds.
Isn't it about seeing a need and stepping in?
No, but I'm going to talk about the heart of generosity. It's you can't have the heart of generosity when you have a lot if you don't have it when you have nothing.
Okay.
And so one thing I think we worked hard on is even when we had nothing and we were in a very bad place, we maintained this heart of generosity.
So you had enough even when you didn't have enough.
Yeah, we did. There was a lot of peace.
So now that's easy to say today because we do, but our position hasn't changed. Our life's changed, but our position on generosity hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
So with where you're at now, and for people listening, you guys have obviously been on a wild ride when it comes to generosity and where you've been financially, where you've grown from as children, like Seattle. But not everyone has a moment like you guys did in Seattle where something reshapes your generosity so much. So for the listener of the CMYK podcast and the people who are part of this community and part of this family, where do you start them off with this thing called generosity? Where's the place that they get to start when they get to start reshaping their minds towards we have enough?
I'll take this one, Master.
You just missed the biggest eye roll in the history of eye rolls from Ethan Canning. I'm really sorry you guys missed it. All right, Kaylee, tell us.
It's cute when he's mad.
Adorable.
I really believe that generosity comes from being connected to people and having relationships with people. You cannot, when you are connected to people and their stories and you're open and you see a need and you are listening, you're going to be compelled to take action, whether it be with your time, money, energy, whatever that may be, even in what's going on in the world. If you have a heart in your body and you care about people and you see something that you feel passionate about, you want to donate to the ACLU, you want to do whatever you need to do, that's great. But it comes from a place of I'm not the only person living in this world hurting or struggling or doing well or not doing well. There are other people around me, and being in an intimate, vulnerable relationship with people, maybe not intimate, but just having that sense of, I see you. I care about you. You're another human being. That is where generosity comes from. You have to be connected. Your heart has to be open to being connected.
Yeah, and then I think once you do that, I think part of, I haven't thought this through a lot, but I think at the root of generosity, there's a sacrificial piece. It was hard for us to give time to the marriage class because we were sacrificing other, like, we could have gone to the park or out to eat, or we could have cleaned our house, but we were sacrificing to give time for the marriage class. Like, when we were, when you're giving money, there's a sacrifice there, because you're, for some people it's like, do I pay rent or tithe or that, and I don't know.
That's part of their story,
that, that's their story, not ours. But even if you have enough, you're still sacrificing, what could I be doing with this money elsewhere?
Yeah.
So we always look at, like, when we do, when we do our, from generosity from a financial piece, we do first fruit, so we give first and then figure the rest out later. And that sounds nice if you can say, oh, I wish I had that luxury. But we, that's what we've always done. That's permeated through our whole story.
And if when we couldn't give anything financially, I think the time and the talents is where we, like, babysitting or my friend's kids, or just even calling a friend and checking in and actually giving a crap. Like, yeah, my husband is out of a job. My mother-in-law just died. I'm pregnant. I'm totally overwhelmed. I feel like I'm drowning. And
this is a great time to be generous.
And how are you? I just need to, like, talk and connect with you and know how you're doing too. Like, just knowing I'm not this only, I'm not the only person living in this world going through things.
Well, I think the answer to your question succinctly is, like, caring, finding needs, and then just doing it.
Just doing it.
And when you're in the doing piece of what I was talking about, that there's, that's where the sacrifice comes in. Because with the doing it, you, there's a lot of other things you could be doing with your time, talents, or money. You just got to do it. And that's what happened for us in Seattle. We started actually doing it.
So, Kaylee, you come from a family of, you, how you spend money is connected to your character.
Yes.
And that's who you are as a person. Ethan, you come from a family with two different parents, different views on money.
Who don't share money, yeah.
You guys get married. You end up in Seattle. Seattle starts to challenge your ideas of generosity. And the piece that seems really important in Seattle is, you know, there's care and there's awareness, but the sacrifice part seems to be something you just hit home. So those three pieces of generosity, like care, awareness, and or care and connection to people, awareness of what they need, and then actually doing it. You guys grow into this place where you move back to Billings. You guys are broke. Generosity takes on a different meaning because it's not about money anymore. It's more about time and talents. Ethan, you work your butt off and have some really unique opportunities, and it works out for you. So you guys are back at a place where financially you can be more generous. So you're generous once again with time, talents, and money. You guys have enough. But then what does continual growth and generosity look like from this point forward?
And you want to talk about the pursuit of more?
Yeah, like, because that, that's the other part of this is, like, and that's why, you know, before we had this whole conversation, the pursuit of more is really interesting because even though you have enough, like I think there's this weird idea around having enough of, like, when is enough enough, or what is enough, or, you know, are you allowed to have more and continue to grow in generosity? Like, I think there's just a lot of questions around excess, to use that word, or more than enough. So you guys are in a place where you have enough right now, but Ethan, you have a mindset of more. Because you are an entrepreneur and you like being generous, and you have this unique recipe as a couple, you and Kaylee, that you guys want to continue to be generous, continue heaping blessing on others. What does more and continued generosity look like from this moment forward?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and take this to begin with. For me personally, it looks like I started going back to school and I'm getting my master's in mental health counseling. And for me, the continuing of that is continuing to look inward and challenge my own, continue to challenge my own narrative and how I see myself and how I see myself in the bigger world picture and the bigger picture of this beautiful planet with a ton of different people on it. Through that, getting to help other people with mental illness, with, you know, life struggles, like my, I can't, you know, I'm not a provider because I have my master sitting right next to me, but I can, but I can give time and I can give talents and I can give my energy to things I really care about. I can get online and donate to the ACLU if I need to. I can call a friend when I'm feeling tired too. And just check in. And so I'm just, that's where I can, and then teaching our kids what that looks like. oh, like when Addie comes home and she talks about a friend who's had a hard day at school, engaging in that conversation with her of like, oh, well, maybe your friend liked to come over for a play date. Sounds like she's having a rough time at home, or just being open, being mm-hmm. open to people and feeling and connecting to people. It's not going to feel like a sacrifice when you're giving time, money, or energy, because it's just, it's inherently compelling you. Like, it's, you want to care and you want to show them that you can care. So it's, you're compelled just by your love. You're not compelled by, oh, God is going to give me more.
Or you're not compelled by, I want to be seen as a generous person.
Yes, you're not compelled by that, which I think
there's
Ethan,
no status.
No,
in it.
And I think, you know, if Ethan and I were really honest, like, it does feel really good to give, and there is some kind of ego stroking that happens when you, but you just acknowledge it, you talk about it, and then you kick it in the A, and you get rid of it.
Now we're not swearing.
I just
thanks for toning it down.
You're welcome. I wanted to say
Ethan,
something.
Ethan, what do you?
Yeah, and I still feel really conflicted about this, and I'm still trying to figure it out. Great.
That sounded silly. Obviously, I don't have it figured out.
You're perfect.
Well, I know and want to believe every day that we have enough. I spend all of the rest of my time thinking about how to create more. And I think part of that, like you and I have discussed at length, is like that's part of what God put in me. And so I think it'd be... So I don't think that's a part of me that I want to kill. I think there's some health to the way my brain thinks, the creation piece, right? But what happens is that as I create more and it goes well, the world then rewards you usually with money and influence. And the part that freaks me out is that money and influence can be incredibly toxic.
It's a drug.
It's a drug. It's like insidious.
Yep.
Where all of a sudden you have this great foundation and narrative of generosity, and then you experience too much success and you can get poisoned.
So are you fighting that then? Like you want to have more, give more, like the word more is something that's a part of you,
mm-hmm.
but you've just identified that without proper restraint, more is bad. Do you fight that?
No, I think more can be bad. I don't want to say that I'm like arrogantly like I'm the one that can have a lot and never lose perspective, because I'm afraid that I will lose perspective.
You and I talked a lot about that.
Yeah.
Your fear of loss of perspective.
Because when I look around the world at people that are uber successful,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to become like any of them.
Also assuming we're.
Yeah, I do.
Bold assumption that you're going to be uber successful.
When I become uber successful.
Hey, when you do, don't forget me. That's all I'm going to say.
Seth.
Like,
I do,
we're going to give you a helicopter someday.
What?
Jesus helicopter.
And here we are full circle. Is this the class, actually? Is this like the class you took in Seattle?
Yep.
Just like helicopter?
We invited you here today. Ethan just has to take his pants off. There's one more part to the class that we can't record.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, I do actually think I'm really successful, and I think that's okay.
I think it's fine, but at the same time, if we're going to talk about this idea of we have enough, being generous, but then what is more? And that's why I think I'm asking, because what does more look like?
Yeah. So the answer to that is the key piece. If you are successful, is maintaining perspective. And I think mm-hmm. maintaining perspective is being incredibly brutally honest and transparent with people in your life like you and going through that journey together.
Yeah.
And having someone to say, hey, you've set this out as a goal for yourself, and then I know this is who you want to be, and you are becoming this person, and having someone.
What's interesting about this whole conversation to me, and maybe this is the way we wrap it up, is I find that there is this idea of awareness around this whole conversation. Like I go back to when you talked about, like, there's a care piece for people, then there's like an awareness piece for people, then there's an actual sacrificial piece for, like, when it comes to generosity. But mm-hmm. what you both just said out of where do we go from here, Kaylee, yours was an awareness of the people around you, community around you, who needs what, just this continual growth of awareness and care of people around you. And you said the same thing in a sense with your word perspective, of like keeping things in perspective of what does more mean, what does generous being generous mm-hmm. mean. It seems like there's this big piece of awareness around generosity that if we lose sight of having enough or being generous that it can very quickly be something that dissolves in our lives.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think in a matter of days.
And I think that happens when you start to think of, when you remove other people from your story. As soon as you start to kind of go on your own and quit staying connected and quit checking in with friends and quit helping people out, moving, and you just kind of are going for the gold, and you start not caring about the other people's narratives, then you, I think that's when you lose perspective.
Yeah, loss of attunement.
Yeah.
Part of the reason why I want to create big companies that are successful is because I want to create workplaces where people can go and feel fulfilled and joyful and have stable income, which I then believe will create, will help foster better marriages and families, which then has a trickle effect for generations.
Mm-hmm.
So my goal with a successful company is not to have millions of dollars. It's to create a workplace where people are joyful and sustainable. That was my goal for the coffee company, where people were loved showing up to work and families were healthy.
Yeah, sustainability is a good word to include in that, because I think when the megachurch model, you have like the, can I just touch on the Joel Osteen topic?
If you want to.
You have this idea of this prosperity gospel where you give more to receive more. That is not sustainable, because if you're compelled by giving because you believe that you will receive, that is inherently selfish and it's for you. It's not for the other person.
It's also broken, because when you talk about the adventure of generosity, there's no promise of reward of any sort.
No. But in Joel Osteen's model, there is. So this
mega church, to be fair, maybe not everyone in his church feels that way. Maybe some people just want to be generous.
No,
so I want to
every single person in that church feels 100% that way, and don't you try to prove me wrong.
Okay, I won't try. I won't try to do anything.
Nope, and but if you're listening, you need to go to that church. And you need help, call 1-800. No, I'm just kidding.
1-800, not Seth.
No.
So you just said something. There's no guarantee in adventure.
No.
Like the adventure of generosity, this phrase that the church uses back in Seattle, there's no guarantee that you get anything out of it.
Except for, like, I think, like, a new radical piece in perspective on what generosity means.
And relationship.
And that's the point.
Maybe that's the perspective that you're talking about, that you want to keep perspective, is like nothing's a guarantee, and that there's no, like, there's no guarantee in any of this being generous stuff.
No.
There's no guarantees.
Mm-mm.
No.
But it's worthwhile for you guys to live this way.
Oh yeah. And even without the guarantee, it's still like the best thing to pursue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're motivated. You're motivated by relationship and staying connected. You're not motivated by gaining treasures in heaven or a helicopter or prominence or, you know, recognition. You're just motivated by the fact that you get to be on this earth with other people with stories, and you are, it's like an honor to engage in their story and narrative with them.
Hmm. Well, I really like all that.
Me too.
That's really good.
You're welcome.
It's really good. Yeah.
Mic drop.
Thank you. That was good. Well, thank you for your time today,
guys. Put on your pants.
Yeah, Ethan, pants back on.
Okay.
You too, yep. Seth.
No, mine were on the whole time.
That's
the whole
debatable,
time.
But.
All right, CMYK Talks Podcast family, thanks for tuning in. Sure love you guys. Please give Ethan and Kaylee a round of applause wherever and however you are listening today. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.